station, tolling for the tongues with no place. By the misdemeanor outlaw, chained and cheated by pursuit. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Even though we clouds white curtain in a far off corner flared, and the hypnotic splattered mist was slowly lifting. Electric light still struck like arrows fired but for the ones condemned to drift or else be kept.
You're listening to KABU's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, where we bring you a range of community-oriented programming built by community members like you. Help KABU reach our $75,000 goal by December 31st, so we can bring you another great year of cutting-edge radio made by you, for you. Just go to kabu.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to contribute today.
Hey everybody, tune in Saturday, December 21st at 5 o'clock for Blues Junction. We're spreading some holiday cheer with singer-songwriter Mark Lemhouse. He's a blues man, and he's got some new music coming out here. I've invited him to come out and do a live performance and interview, and who knows, maybe he'll squeeze in a holiday tune. So again, that's Mark Lemhouse, Saturday, December 21st. You're invited. Winter's now fading,
and I won't have to stay here too. Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, I need to say this show is being broadcast during KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, where we are giving the gift of grassroots community media. The rich and diverse programming on KBOO, including, of course, Pathways, relies on contributions from listeners like you. Help us reach our goal of $75,000 before December 31st, and you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321, and we really appreciate your support. Well, today we have a very interesting show because we live in an era marked by dramatic polarization, political upheaval, and social conflicts. It's hard to imagine a time when greater divisiveness existed in America and around the world. Perhaps understanding the role that the universal law of cause and effect, also known as karma, is playing in shaping our current state of affairs and possibly can offer us a positive path forward. Our guest today is Morty Levine, co-author of The Beginner's Guide to Karma, How to Live with Less Negativity and More Peace. Co-authored with Lama Lanang Rinpoche. Now, Morty is an entrepreneur, a meditation teacher, and the president of the Jigme Lingpa Center. He also created the Meditation Pro Series, a meditation program designed to alleviate chronic health issues. Well, hello, Morty, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Very impressed with the pronunciation of Lama Lanang's name, by the way. I just want to put that out there.
Well,
and
thank you.
And when you say polarization, what are you talking about? I don't even understand that polarization. What polarization are you talking about there, Paulo?
Okay, so now we need to find out how you get to live on cloud nine like that, Morty. But before we go there, right. I want to ask you, you co-authored this book with Lama Lanang Rinpoche. How did you come to know him? And what inspired you guys to do a book together?
So in my late 50s, I started thinking about what happens when we die and all that good business. You know, I've been a Buddhist my entire adult life, but, you know, some of the Buddhists don't really talk about rebirth and reincarnation that, you know, very much.
Right.
Even though the Buddha himself did. But certainly the Tibetan Buddhists, they talk about it all the time. So I was looking around for a teacher. This goes back about 7 years ago, and magically met up and found Lama Lanang Rinpoche, who is a master in Nyingma lineage and also a master certainly of bringing people from this life and as they're dying through the bardo or the gap between this life and the next life. So I started studying with him and then eventually became president of his organization, worldwide organization. And then we've written a few books together.
So that's fascinating what you just said about him having this expertise in helping people through the bardos or the after-death experience. Can you kind of elucidate that a little bit for our audience who might not know what a bardo is?
Sure. So in Tibetan Buddhism, we believe that when we die, you know, the only thing that really the only thing you take with you is your karma, which means your body is left behind, your material possessions, your family. You take nothing into the next phase, which in this particular case we call the bardo or the gap between this lifetime and your next rebirth lifetime. And the only thing that we believe you take with you is a portion of your consciousness, or we call it the karma, or your mental habits. These are all synonyms. That's what follows you into this period of time. Could be up to 7 weeks, could be longer, could be shorter. And then at that point, you will then find the next body to be reborn into. With what? And what you take with you is that karma, that consciousness, those habits.
So how would you define karma?
So karma literally means action. It applies to action of thought, action of speech, and action of a physical action. And it goes back 3,000 years, preceded the time of the Buddha, preceded Hinduism. It's written about in the Upanishads. And Buddha explained it and refined it quite a bit during his time. He taught that karma is far more sophisticated than the simple linear cause and effect most of us think it is. Oh, that's his karma. Oh, that's her karma. Oh, this happened to me, it's my karma. So he taught it's far more sophisticated than that. It really is, the crux of it is motivation. Karma is all about motivation. For example, I'm gonna write a check. There's a nonprofit down the street here from where I live. I'm gonna write a check for $100. Why? Because my neighbor wrote a check for $90, and I know, I know they have this thing they print out who donated what, and I want to make sure my neighbors see I put in 100, he put in 90. It's very important to me. Or I could write a check for $100, and those kids, they really need office supplies and food, and I really want to help them out. Two completely different motivations, two completely different karmas. So it's based upon intention or motivation. And then the Buddha also taught that we have the ability to change our karma, change our negative karma, that kind of thing. Nothing is predetermined. Very important. We do not believe in predeterminism. And finally, your karma, as I mentioned earlier, plays a primary role in determining your rebirth into the next lifetime.
This is all so fascinating. And I'm wondering, okay, we die, we let go of the body, we let go of the personality, we let go of the ego, or hopefully we do, and we go into this limbo state, this bardo state, and based on our karma, which is, I don't know, is that a moral judgment about how good we've been or how good we've tried or how pure our intentions were? But based on our karma, we get assigned a reincarnation. There's so many questions around that. I mean, does it have to be coming back to Earth? I like to think if I earn enough good karma in this lifetime, I can talk God into sending me somewhere else. Is there a Buddhist understanding about that?
Well, yeah, as Buddhists, we typically don't, and I don't want to speak for all Buddhists, but typically don't believe in God. in that regard.
Well, I mean, I was just using that metaphorically.
Oh, okay, good. All right. Yeah, yeah. You scared me there for a little. Yeah. So
no,
there's nothing
not
wrong with it. there's nothing wrong with it for sure. It's just not our belief system. But those people that do believe in God, if it gets them to a better spiritual place, I'm all for it. We support it 1,000%.
Well, the question basically was, right, does all reincarnation have people coming back to this planet?
So the way it works, we're getting into the weeds pretty quick, which is fine with me, is that consciousness that follows you into the bardo, into the gap, that bardo is very similar to the dream state that we experience when we're dreaming at night. And most of us don't have any control over our dreams. We are, if I watch a horror movie before I fall asleep, chances are my dreams are going to be that horror movie. Watch a lot of sex, pornography, chances are that's going to follow me. That's our karma. We're now perpetuating those mental habits, and that stays with us until we are reborn. So from an angry person, I'm going to take that angry personage into the next lifetime. How does that happen? Yes, there is no assignation, as you maybe tongue-in-cheek said. There's no one keeping tally. It's more like the law of gravity, in the sense that if you throw a ball up in the air, you know it's going to come down. Same thing here. Now karma doesn't happen overnight necessarily. It could. If I punch you in the face, you might punch me back. Instant karma. If I yell at you, we yell at my wife, she's gonna yell at me right back. Instant karma. But sometimes things can take more time than that to come to fruition. It could take moments, minutes, days, weeks, years, or lifetimes before we experience the consequences of our karmic actions.
It's a lot easier to believe in instant karma, you know, because of how bad people seem to get away with everything. I'm thinking of one person in particular, but it's just it's hard to understand. While good people have bad things happen to them, like Job, for instance.
Let's talk about this very special person that we're, you know, his name is probably president to be Donald Trump. So Donald Trump does not, in general, probably lives in what we would call a hell realm. We have to look at his state of mind.
Right.
And not only that, so if he's very angry, he's happy when he wins and he's angry when he loses. And we all win or lose, that's just life. And the wins that he has are, the happiness is usually very short term. So we don't know his motivation. We can only guess. Not only that, he may or may not go to jail, he may or may not get fined, et cetera, et cetera. But karma is much, much larger than the legal system or the justice system that we have. It reflects our state of mind and how we deal with things that come our way. Do we allow ourselves to be ruled by our karma? I'm an angry person. If you disagree with me, I'm going to get angry with you. Or we want to break our karma. And, you know, you say you disagree with me. I say, well, maybe Powell's got a point there. I don't know everything. So I'm not concerned so much with President Trump's karma. That's his business. That's up to him. We can't know everyone's karma. We don't know anyone's motivation. I barely know my own motivation. But what we focus on as Buddhists are, we focus on my karma and how I'm going to improve it or purify negative karma or keep creating positive karma. And I can't speak for or change anyone else's karma. I'm not even going to try.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. But we live in an extremely divisive time right now. And, you know, how does karma have anything to do with that? I mean, is this about collective karma? You write about collective karma in the book. Has humanity accumulated a lot of bad karma?
I don't know I have an opinion, but I don't know the answer to that. Once again, I don't know what is creating where we are now. I can hypothesize, and I can talk about, you know, well, in the last few presidents, this is what happened, and they didn't take care of those people, and they, you know, and they treated the middle of the country this way, and the middle class, and the taxes, and they should have done this, President Carter, blah, blah, blah. It's meaningless. Okay. The important thing now is I need to be able to, work on my own state of mind, work on my own motivation, work on not being so selfish. Another way to define negative karma is if my motivation is selfish, my ego, that's negative karma. If my motivation is selfless, because I really want to help those kids, that's positive karma. Another way of looking at it is I have opinions. If I view some of those opinions as facts, the more concretized, the more permanence I assign to my views of myself or others or situations, that creates negative karma. The more open-minded I am about other people, other situations, myself, that creates positive karma. So you talk about the polarization, and when you get down and dirty with it, it's okay for people to have different opinions, but it's the way that we communicate and the way we remain hopefully open-minded to other people's opinions.
Right. You know, I love that. You know, you say in the book, and I'm going to quote the book, it says, the more certain of who we think we are, the more we are trying to hold on to something illusory and inconsistent. This creates negative karma. That's a very interesting concept. You know, that points to the ego, or what's called the ego. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And so just being egocentric and operating from that point of view creates negative karma.
Right. So, for example, I want to get a job and I want to get paid. Is that selfish? Well, that's not the kind of selfishness we're talking about. We're talking about ego, supporting the ego, supporting the self, which is that example of the donation. You know, I want people to know that I made that donation and I made more donation than my neighbor. That's the kind of negative karma we're talking about. That's the kind of selfishness that we're talking about.
And is that what we should be looking for? Because you say we can see karma at work when we learn to pay attention and know what to look for. Is that what you're talking about? Egocentric?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So when I'm trying to make decisions, determinations, opinions, if we can be selfless, more selfless, if we can be open-minded, that operating system creates positive karma. The more you and I get into an argument where I say, well, there's no way, he's definitely going to be a horrible, horrible president. And you're much smarter and you're much wiser. And you go, you know, there's so many things at play here. We don't really know what's going to happen and how he's going to impact people. We just don't know. We can hope for the best. But in the meantime, I know what I need to do for my own state of mind and for those around me to be supportive, to be loving, to be selfless. That's what I can control.
Well, that seems to be a central lesson from your book, is to stay in your lane, take care of yourself, and be careful about the expression of your intentions. And you talk about the central importance of intention, that which precedes thought, speech, or actions, and is the basis of karma. Well, there's an old expression, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So, you know, tell us about your concept of the central importance of intention.
Right. So, you know, I'm driving down the road, you know, I'm going to kill some flies. It's going to happen. Flies are going to run into my windshield. And they're going to die. But that's not, or by accident, a squirrel crosses my path. My intention was not to hurt them. I don't want to hurt them, but it happens. So something like that would have minimal or no real negative karma associated with it. That's really the squirrel's karma. So that's just an example of, as opposed to, you know, I'm driving late at night and I see someone crossing the street who I don't like, and I go, there's John, let me go get him, boom. So your intentions really, just like it's similar to motivation, that determines your positive or negative karma. There's one other point, which is that I want to bring up, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm just going to take care of myself. But, you know, there's a peace rally. I'll go to the peace rally. Let's support that. Let's support, you know, I don't like the way a certain president did something. Yes, we can go and we can support that. But we want to support that with open-mindedness, with selflessness, without violence, without anger. So many of the quote-unquote peace rallies that we see are not really, you don't see a lot of peace going on.
It's not very peaceful.
Right.
Yeah. You know, yeah, that reminds me of of the fact that we are not very conscious of what we're doing a lot of the time from the point of view of intention.
Right. So that's kind of the what the thank you for bringing that up. That's what the book talks about, which is how do we do this? Well, if I'm not even aware of what I'm thinking about, if I'm not even sensitive to my state of mind and what my motivations are, then you don't have a chance. Oh, but if you meditate, and meditation doesn't have to be sitting on a cushion, doesn't have to be sitting on a chair. Meditation can be a walking meditation. It could be martial arts. It could be gardening. It could be swimming. So there's many different ways we can meditate, which is just a way of saying, retrain our mind to be in the present moment. And the more we do that, the more likely we are to understand and be sensitive to our motivations, our opinions, how concrete are they? Are we open-minded, et cetera, et cetera?
It seems like the trick is redefining our relationship to thought or to thinking, because most thinking is not intentional. And it's, you know, thoughts arise no matter what. Anybody who's tried to meditate knows they can't stop thoughts from arising. But we can stop dwelling on them. We can stop investing in them. But, you know, the thoughts are very important because that leads to speech and actions. That's where it kind of all starts. That's where karma gestates, as you say in the book. So talk to us about this relationship to thought and how.
So I think, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah. So I think it was the NIH, we're going 20, 30 years ago. They did a study. Humans think, you know, on average, whatever, 60,000 thoughts in a 24-hour period, some huge number. And that's interesting. What's more interesting is 85, 90% of those thoughts are the same thoughts from the prior day.
Right.
not a lot of creativity going on, but that's a reflection of our karma being perpetuated. And most of the time, we're not even aware of a large degree of our thoughts. But as you learn to meditate, once again, it doesn't have to be the sitting meditation. If it can, that's great. But there's other ways to retrain the mind and still get tremendous benefits. You start to realize that in between your thoughts, there are gaps. Some people say it's a bardo, different type of bardo. Uh-huh. And it's a pause. And the more you're sensitive and you realize that, the more you're aware of that, then when something doesn't go my way, instead of me triggering back and going, oh, Paolo, you idiot, I just let it go. Oh, you just observe it. And then you can make a decision. Do I want to do what I've been doing my entire life, which is react negatively? Or do I want to maybe take a breath? Or do I want to maybe think, Jay, you know what? Maybe that's okay. Maybe you just be a little more open-minded about it. So it all starts with, as you said, the thoughts, being aware and sensitive, and then noticing there are gaps there, and you have the option and the choice of how you want to think.
Yeah, and this is how meditation can really help us.
Big
now,
time, yeah.
Chapter 3 is entitled, Where is Karma Stored? So I'm just going to ask you that question.
I have a closet in my house where I store a lot of stuff. There's a box there. I wrote karma on it in magic marker, and that's kind of where it's stored. No. I hope your viewership has a little sense of humor. Anyway, so the consciousness is in our mind, and we are also connected to a larger mind. We'll call it the universal mind or whatever words there are out there in the Buddhist in the Buddhist pantheon or the Buddhist literature. So basically, it's stored in our consciousness, not unlike our memories. We have memories.
Right.
We know where in the brain they are, sure. So we have some kind of idea where they are in the brain. We're not talking about the brain. We're talking about the mind. So, for example, when some people have had near-death experiences where they've actually died, mind-brain wasn't working, dead, everything's dead, heart's dead, brain's dead. But then minutes, hours, even days later, they awaken, so to speak, from their death. And they have a memory of what transpired. So even though their brain was not working, so I want to get out of this concept that the memory is stored in the brain. Certainly the brain plays a large role in it, but we're talking about our consciousness, which we believe is where the karmic seeds are stored. It's a form of memory.
Right. Okay. Now, chapter eight, we're kind of running out of time and there's so much more to talk about, but chapter eight is about how do you reduce negative karma that you've already created, and can it ever be fully extinguished?
I don't remember chapter eight, Paul. No, I'm kidding.
That's
so,
bad karma.
Right, they're bad karma for me. Yeah. So there's several ways. And we'll talk very briefly about two of them. One is, you know, I've been a nasty guy my entire life. I want to change. I want to change right now. Great. I start creating good karma. Start meditating. You can start anytime you want. You can change your karma anytime you want. And then as you start to create good karma, guess what? Your negative karma gets diluted. That's simple math. Okay.
All right.
That's one way. The other way is, if I know that I've been yelling, I've been an angry person. In the book, we go into great detail on how you can purify your karma, which is if you recognize that, if you're aware of that, and you're able to, you believe in something greater than yourself. It could be Jesus Christ. It could be a universal energy. It could be a Buddhist deity. It could be Moses. It doesn't really matter. But if you're able to observe and create some kind of, even just for a few minutes, a relationship with that greater being, then what you can do is you can actually express your regret to that greater being. You can also take a stance and say, I am not going to do that anymore.
Or you can make amends.
Or you can, say again?
Make amends.
You may, and then the last step in this purification process is I want to make amends, and I'm going to either maybe make a donation and dedicate that donation to, you know, reducing suffering in the world. I can do a good deed and dedicate the karma from that good deed to reducing suffering in the world. So the idea is you've got that negative karma and you're purifying it in that way.
Okay, last question. Chapter 9. What happens to your karma when you die? What is the relationship between rebirth and karma?
Karma is the only thing you take with you. You know, you don't take anything else. So once you recognize that, you'll want, you know, that consciousness that you take with you into the afterlife, the bardo, and into the rebirth, that's the only thing you get to take with you. So, you know, nothing else. So that's a motivation for those of us that are concerned about that to start creating that good karma, those good habits, those good tendencies, that selflessness, that open-mindedness of motivations to start that now.
Beautiful. And do you think the idea of karma can be meaningful to people if they don't believe in reincarnation?
Absolutely, because the way, if I'm angry now, chances are I'm going to be angry the next moment from now. If I'm angry now because you pissed me off and that triggers me, then that's another form of karma. Is I realize that karma the next minute, the next moment. So it'll make us a happier, more freer person in this lifetime if we have that understanding of karma, even if you don't believe in rebirth.
Yeah, it's similar to the Christian concept, as you sow, so shall you reap.
Absolutely.
Well, on that note, I want to say thank you so much for being on the show today. There's so much more we could explore, but we have run out of time. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is www.mordylevine.com. It's all one word, MordyLevine.com. Now, for those who may have tuned into Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Morty Levine, co-author of The Beginner's Guide to Karma, How to Live with Less Negativity and More Peace. A highly recommended book. I learned a lot from it, and I learned a lot from today's conversation. And I want to thank you and all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. And even better, podcasts of today's show you can listen to and forward to others are available for free at divination.com. And that's spelled D-I-V-I nation.com, as well as Paulo's YouTube channel and other free podcast servers. Now, before I officially sign off, a quick appeal to you, dear listener, to become a member of KBOO today. KBOO has been a staple in our community for over 56 years and is an auditory meeting place for revolutionaries and creatives alike, bringing grassroots community media to the masses. And it's the only channel in Portland or in Oregon that would host a show like Pathways for the last 40 years. So help us reach our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign goal of $75,000. Please support independent radio at kboo.fm/give or text the letters KBOO to the number 44321. Thank you for your support and contribution. We can't do it without you. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcasts. And thanks again to Morty Levine and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
To KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements.